banning COVID-19 vaccine mandates is the GOP's top priority. The Omicron variant, plus Todd Rokita and education, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 3rd, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana House Republicans have revealed their top priority for the 2022 legislative session. 56 members of the House GOP caucus signed on to a reintroduced bill that would effectively ban private companies from enforcing COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Republicans initially planned to pass their bill this week, suspending all rules to approve the bill in a single-day session. But the state's top business and healthcare organizations loudly objected, prompting Republicans to back down. But the House GOP still wants to push forward on the issue once lawmakers return in January for their regular session. The reintroduced bill is almost exactly the same with a minor difference. Previously, it listed pregnancy or anticipated pregnancy as reasons to opt out of getting the vaccine. That's been removed. The bill's future is uncertain. Even if the House passes it largely unchanged, the Senate GOP may have objections to the bill's strict language, and Governor Eric Holcomb didn't seem particularly supportive of the original legislation. Will the General Assembly effectively ban enforcement of COVID-19 vaccine mandates? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock. Republican Chris Mitchum. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Chris, we've been talking on this show before that Republicans are trying to balance the sort of conservative principles of the free market, you know, letting private companies do what they want, with wanting to ban these restrictions on what they view as healthcare freedom. Does this bill accomplish that balance?
Well, I think one thing is for certain is that I do not envy the position that House and Senate leadership find themselves in right now. I think no matter how this bill turns out, you're going to have two sides of the argument, one that thinks this bill is not going to go far enough in protecting businesses, and you're going to have another side that says this bill goes too far in limiting any kind of freedom. But I think one thing that is for certain is when you see this bill, they really tried their best to make that balance. Ultimately, what it is you're asking employees to take seriously these medical and religious exemptions that people are requesting. But there's also portions of the bill that allows for employers to still require testing when it comes to these exemptions, as well as there's a bill, part of the bill that encourages employers to take action against employees that refuse to submit to these testing requests. So like you said earlier, it's definitely going to be a top priority. The fact that it's already been filed, you can expect it to be expedited through the process. And as we've seen in previous years, a introduced bill is likely not going to be what it looks like when it passes into law. So it'll be interesting to see what they do as this bill works through the process. They did a good job of recognizing whenever they presented this to the public that there is work that needs to be done rather than going and trying to push it through to become law.
Elise Schrock, I'll ask pretty much the same question. Does this bill strike the right balance?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about two sides, there is a side that includes the state medical association, the service industry, the leading voices in the hospital industry, the state manufacturers association, and Democrats who are all saying, we think this is a bad idea. The only people making it a priority are the Republicans. And I would venture as far to say it is some of the more extreme right Republicans that have taken control of state House Republicans and how policy is led there. So I don't think that there any of those industries aren't taking this seriously. I think that they are saying that this is not a great idea, and they came here and they said that, and they know that, Democrats know that, and I think most Hoosiers know that.
Now, Nikki Kelly, a lot has happened on this issue since we last taped a new episode of this show. So could you, for a second, catch us up on everything that has gotten us to this point and what you think all of that portends for the future of this bill once we get to the regular session in January?
Yeah, last week we had a marathon 7-hour hearing on essentially the language in that bill. And the thing that struck me sitting there the whole time is really no one liked it. You know, there were very few people who actually testified in support of it. And in fact, even the sort of far right people who want it, I noticed on Instagram literally this week, every single comment was, this is terrible. It should be a straight out ban on vaccine mandates, that kind of thing. So they're certainly not giving everyone what they want. I don't think they're giving anyone what they want, which sometimes people might say is the way you do good legislation. But I also think it's interesting that they're keeping these two issues together, and that might cause an interesting thing. There are tons of people. I mean, it would pass, you know, very overwhelming just to end the you know, let the public health emergency expire. But by tying it to this vaccine mandate language, you might have some people who feel like they have to vote for that because they like the other part.
Yeah. John Schwanes, with it seems to me Republicans are trying to walk a line here a little bit, which is they're not trying to upset the business community too much, but at the same time responding to at least parts of their constituency who are very angry about any vaccine mandate, whether by the government or by a private business. And it doesn't seem like they're making anybody happy here. So is this one of those where that just means they've found the right compromise, or are they running the risk of upsetting the wrong people?
I think they run the risk of upsetting a lot of people. But the question is, who are the people they're upsetting? They're upsetting their traditional allies in the business community and manufacturing community, some of the largest employers, certainly in the state of Indiana. So, but what they are speaking to and the people that they are not angering with this push would be the right wing of the Republican Party, those who feel that there should be bans on these types of what they perceive to be draconian, big brother types of measures. Now, granted, as Nikki said, many of people within that faction of the party don't think this bill goes far enough, hence bringing up your setup about this being sort of enough to anger all sides of the issue. I guess the flip side of that was they could have deferred to the CDC and medical community about how to do this, not wade into it. And they probably would have had also some frustration on both sides of the issue. I think in the end, certainly the House is enthusiastic. I don't know if everyone in the Senate will necessarily be as enthusiastic about at least pushing it through very quickly, in part because we don't really know yet the full story of COVID. Omicron is here. We don't know even, where will that lead us? There are a lot of unanswered questions. There's still the Delta variant, which is causing a lot of headaches. So still some confusion, and big businesses that have bristled at regulations, or I mean, these types of actions, say in Texas and other states, Indiana's positioned itself as a business-friendly state. And if we're seen as the one that puts the thumb on the scale in terms of, to mix metaphors, tying the hands of business leaders, that could be a blow to our long-term economic development efforts, it would seem to me.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: should Indiana lawmakers effectively ban private companies from enforcing COVID-19 vaccine mandates? A, yes, or B, no. Last week, or really 2 weeks ago, we asked you whether Indiana lawmakers should cut taxes during the upcoming legislative session. 40% of you say yes, 60% of you say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, there is a new COVID-19 variant making headlines, as John just alluded to, the Omicron variant. And while there are concerns about the transmissibility of this version of the virus, some COVID experts say the number of mutations it possesses actually makes it easy to detect. Dr. Laura Morris is the vaccine co-chair at MU Health in Missouri. She says Omicron has a molecular signature that certain PCR tests can pick up quickly. Those samples can then be prioritized for genetic sequencing. But Morris says many questions remain.
So is this really going to be more transmissible? Is it going to make patients sicker? So far, that does not appear to be the case, but there are so few cases and not enough time has passed to really be able to say that for sure.
Morris says so far, there's nothing to suggest that current best practices, masking and vaccination, will change. Elise Schrock, former Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams, who was also former Indiana Health Commissioner, recently said, we're going to have to learn to live with COVID, given that the number of unvaccinated people means it's not going to really go away. Is that just where we are for the foreseeable future?
Yes, but there is a way to stop it, and that is getting vaccinated. But I do hear what Dr. Adams is saying, and I think he, like most of the adults in the room, are looking pragmatically at the actual field of play that we are in right now. And that's why you'll see Republican Dr. Adams and Democrats like President Biden, our own Congressman Mervan, Congressman Carson, centering how they react to this by helping Hoosiers get through it by investing hundreds of million dollars in things that are actually policies and things that everyday Hoosiers need, like roads, childcare infrastructure, assistance with hunger issues. So I think that it is the foreseeable future, unfortunately, but Democrats are delivering despite those that are here super spreading the gospel of the unvaccinated, which hurts our businesses, which hurts our schools, and which hurts our communities.
Chris, Governor Holcomb said something very similar to Dr. Adams when I talked to him about what Omicron does to change the state's plans. He said, I think a lot of people are realizing that we're just, COVID's going to be here a long time. He also continued to bang the drum on getting vaccinated because obviously that is the best path to both, curbing the widespread of the virus as well as making sure that you yourself are protected from more serious illness and death. But does it seem silly for the governor and Republican legislative leaders to talk about we need to end the public health emergency at the same time that we have hospitals worried about a winter surge and the unknown, side effects, if you will, of the Omicron variant?
I wouldn't call it silly, just because, as Elise mentioned, the solution is out there, and that's to get people vaccinated and get as many people vaccinated as we can. And I think Governor Holcomb has done a great job of both noting that, yes, all of the solutions are out there. We know that vaccines are work. The best practices out there remain to fight this new variant. Research has shown that as well. So I think when it comes to ending the public health emergency, we know solutions are out there. We know what to do. And when it comes to having our state under this constant cloud of a public health emergency, when's it going to end? As Dr. Jerome Adams mentioned, it's going to be around for a while as long as there's unvaccinated people. We've seen waves before of COVID. And at this point, we know where the solutions are, and we need to get people vaccinated so we can continue to fight this better.
John Schwanes, by the time lawmakers come back for their legislative session in January, assuming they wait until then, which at this point I think we can assume, although I thought that a couple weeks ago, and here we are. But assuming that they don't come back until January, we are going to go through about a month of what hospitals are really concerned about being a bad winter surge of this virus, Omicron or not. Will a bad winter surge, if it is here like we expect, does that change the way lawmakers view any issue related to COVID once they get back into session?
I think breaking news headlines do have a way of changing agendas in the General Assembly. We've seen it on any number of issues. The extent that people are concerned about, for instance, gun safety and school safety always spikes in the General Assembly and elsewhere, understandably, after, say, a high-profile school shooting. So in this instance, if we were to see the Omicron variant become deadlier than it appears to be, or it's not as controllable as it appears to be, or if Delta variant spikes in some way, I think it would be difficult. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, but I think it would be more difficult for lawmakers to move with speed to jettison, declared emergency, and also then tie the hands of large businesses who want to inoculate their workforces. Because keep in mind, I just saw an analysis of the largest employers in the country, and the vast majority are requiring vaccinations. So this, really would put Indiana sort of in an awkward spot and in the national spotlight at a time, if in fact the kind of spike in the disease that you the scenario that you described were to come to pass.
Nikki Kelly, Governor Holcomb is, as we've talked about, asking for these three administrative changes for the legislature to make so he can end the public health emergency. Those are the only things that are really in effect at this point. It's not the only tools he's used, even this year alone, though. But is this an acknowledgement that pretty much no matter what happens with the virus at this point, the state's just not going to do more than it's currently doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think Governor Holcomb has been clear about that since the vaccine became widely available. You know, to be perfectly frank, if you look at the public health emergency, there isn't anything left in it that is actually doing anything to actively stop the spread of the virus. So in some ways, this whole discussion is just symbolism. So about whether to end it or not, as long as he gets those three things that keep some federal money flowing, allow for vaccine clinics for young Hoosiers, you know, that's the only things in there anymore that are really needed to deal with COVID on an ongoing daily basis.
All right. Well, some religious leaders are condemning Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita's latest published remarks discussing Black Lives Matter in school and issues like critical race theory. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports Rokita has talked a lot about schools lately, updating his so-called Parents' Bill of Rights and recently issuing a formal advisory opinion on Black Lives Matter in schools.
President of the Concerned Clergy of Indianapolis, Reverend David W. Green Sr., says Rokita's published remarks are racist. He says Rokita's ongoing criticisms of how schools talk about race and equity undermines efforts to support all students and diversify the teaching workforce.
His remarks lead to disunity. They are divisive. While he's trying to claim that he's trying to keep that from happening.
Green says children need a well-rounded education, including on uncomfortable topics, and he encourages parents to get involved with their local school system.
Nikki Kelly, what is Todd Rokita doing getting involved in these issues in his position as Attorney General of the state of Indiana?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit different. For instance, his opinion on the Black Lives Matter issue was an advisory opinion sought by Indiana lawmakers. So that was a literal legal question put to him. So he has an obligation as the state's attorney to respond to that. Now, going further, the Parents' Bill of Rights, you know, I don't know. I'd like him to explain where that fits into the attorney general's, you know, actual duties. Is it consumer protection? Is it, you know, I can't really find it, but you know, then again, he's a statewide elected leader, and you know, I guess he can use his platform any way he wants, as long as, you know, he's not afoul of any spending laws or things like that.
Yeah. To that point, John Schwanis, obviously a lot of people are viewing Rokita's moves here as, particularly on the Parents' Bill of Rights, because as Nikki points out, lawmakers sought his advisory opinion, but a lot of people are viewing him as purely political. Is there anything wrong with that?
Anything wrong? Let's stipulate, yes, it is probably purely political. Again, it's not unprecedented. You have individuals who hold these other offices, and by other offices, I mean those that aren't the top job, the governor's office. And we've seen in the past of both parties, secretaries of state sort of venture off into international, pontificating on international affairs and so forth, and education, which again is not necessarily part of the purview of the office. So it's not without precedent. It's just that perhaps Todd Rokita has taken it to a new level in his desire to, well, fill in the blank, I guess, either stay in the headlines on issues that he feels are important to his core constituency, conservatives within the Republican Party. And one would presume then that the reason people seek headlines and seek the attention of core constituencies is to pursue another office, whatever that office might be.
He's running for governor.
Rokita has a long record of seeking other offices. I mean, that's sort of what he's done. So again, I think it's pretty apparent what's going on here. It's an exercise in solidifying the base, and as he sees it, trying to expand it.
All right. Chris,
but I think it really could affect the office. I mean, he continues to do this. He continues to offer opinion over opinion to stay in the news, to run probably for governor at some point, which in turn will you know, water down his opinions over time, and that will diminish the office of the Attorney General. So I think it does have an effect on the office, and that's unfortunate.
Chris, I want to ask you about these are the issues that we're talking about here in this conversation that Todd Rokita has issued opinions on. Those are serious debates that are going to be had in the legislative session about the curriculum in schools and things like that. Is Todd Rokita opining on these things in the way he has helping anybody in those debates?
Well, I think you have to look no further than last session to see that the state legislature may or may not be the biggest fans of different executive officers. So when it comes to him implementing his opinions into these controversial issues, for one, like it or love it, that's kind of been the image that he's been trying to come across. And number two, it's certainly not unique to Indiana. I think you have to look just as far as Missouri. I believe there was an attorney general out there that recently sued a school corporation over some curriculum that involves race or something like that. So as long as continues to be a national trend of various executive officers kind of implementing their opinions into these controversial issues, I think we can all agree that Todd Rokita isn't one to perhaps back down from implementing his opinion as well.
And Elise, I'll wrap up this part of the conversation with you again, which is to ask, you know, like I said, we expect these issues to come up at the legislative session. At this point, what do you expect Indiana Republican lawmakers to do when it comes to these sorts of issues?
I mean, there are some that are probably in the same camp as him, so it could be a way for them to leverage this extreme agenda. But by and large, what we've seen in the past is he gets to, like I said earlier, keep offering opinion over opinion to get in the news, to be discussed on shows like this. It's a tactic, but it will diminish him. It will diminish the office. And I don't think I think we could all agree that that's not exactly the type of elected official that Hoosiers want to see in the Attorney General's office or in the governor's office. It doesn't serve us well.
All right. Well, many schools across Indiana have finalized major teacher pay raises in recent weeks. Indiana Public Broadcasting, Ginny Lindsay, again reports some schools have struggled to strike a deal, but most reached agreements with their educators before the state's deadline.
Indiana lawmakers earmarked funding specifically for teacher pay raises during the 2021 legislative session. State leaders said they expected schools to funnel those dollars to teachers after protests across the state and country and the pandemic increased the workloads of educators everywhere. Denny Costerson is the executive director of the Indiana Association of School Business Officials. He says overall, Indiana schools have held up their end of the deal.
We're seeing a lot of very large percentage increases that we haven't seen for many, many years.
But it hasn't been easy for everyone. According to the Indiana Education Employment Relations Board, 15 school corporations didn't finalize their bargaining agreements by the state's deadline.
John Schwannis, realistically, given what we just heard, is the Indiana General Assembly done talking about teacher pay for the foreseeable future?
I think it would like to be done with it. It may think it's done with it, but as I said a question or two ago, headlines, trends, breaking news, developments have a way of overriding agendas. And if the situation is quiet, they can avoid it. If, in fact, there is a more critical teacher shortage or we see some sort of exodus of teachers in the coming months and years and test scores are suffering because of it and school districts are having trouble, It won't be off the radar. All of a sudden, it will be back on.
Nikki Kelly, basically the same question. Well, how much will Republicans point to this data and say, we're done for a while?
Yeah, I mean, certainly for the two-year budget cycle. But, you know, you can't give a huge influx of dollars and use that money for raises if you're not going to continue it. Because that's the fear, right, is that then we'll drop them back down and then what do school districts do if suddenly they're getting less than they got the year before? Then how do you continue those raises? And those discussions will become important next year, especially if they consider a long-term tax cut.
All right. Well, finally, a number of high-profile head coaching moves recently in college football, including Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly leaving for Louisiana State University, LSU. His contract there is 10 years and at least $95 million, not including incentives. And that's after the LSU position came open, in part via a $17 million buyout the university is giving to former coach Ed Orgeron. Elise Schrock, Where or where will these poor universities ever find the money to pay their players?
Right. I mean, it's great to see. I think a lot of people are excited to see Marcus Freeman take the reins of this program. I don't know. Maybe this is the one thing that finally makes the legislature and Republicans crack into that $4 billion surplus we've just been cashing up for years and years. I don't know.
Is this a good move, Chris, for Notre Dame?
I don't know, because what people are forgetting is there's a decent chance that they make the college football playoff next week if certain results go their way. So it's going to be a heck of a debut for their new coach if that's going to be the first or one of the first games under charge is competing for a piece of silverware that they haven't gotten in a while.
That would be something. All right, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Chris Mitchum, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.